Warning, the Catholic Man Show contains high levels of manliness. If you think you may be too weak to withstand the manliness represented in the following program, please do yourself a favor and stop listening now. If you choose to continue in spite of this warning, if at any time you feel yourself overcome by the manliness, stop immediately and consult your closest medical professional. And now, for the not so fair, faint, or frilly, we present The Catholic Man Show.
Happy Advent to all you manly men out there. Welcome to The Catholic Man Show. I'm Adam Minahan, here with David Niles. We are vastly approaching Christmas.
Days away,
which I'm very excited about. Hence what Advent season is all about. But welcome to The Catholic Man Show. If this is your first time listening, Dave, we do three things. But we have a ceremonial candle to start before we say that.
Okay, so we're doing the candle now.
Yeah.
Not before the man gear. I couldn't remember when we said we needed a candle for.
Remember the ceremonial, this is what we do every episode.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I'm jogging your
memory.
So
we have lit, the candle is lit.
Yes.
Which is also apropos for being in the Advent season.
Like we planned it.
Right. You know what I love about Advent? I mean, this is one thing I love about Advent. More fire. Than usual.
Right.
There's just more fire.
Yeah, I like that.
Which is cool.
Agreed.
Yeah. So the three things we do every episode is 1, open review and enjoy a manly beverage. 2, highlight a man gear of some kind. We try to talk about why is this gear or thing manly? What's manly about it? Sometimes it's obvious, sometimes it's not. 3, we have a manly discussion on a manly topic.
Mm-hmm.
Today we're talking about Our Lady, so it's going to be awesome.
It's about time we do another episode about Our Lady anyway.
Yeah.
But okay, so tell them really quick.
Okay, candle. So the candle was sent to us by one of our Council of Man members, Christian Sakamoto,
who we met, he and his dad.
Yes, yeah, Scott was there at the camp out, which was
awesome.
Which was excellent.
Epic.
And so they have a candle company called Viaggi. So he was kind enough to send this. The scent is Taj Mahal.
It's a very manly.
It is. It's not overpowering.
Right.
You know, it's nice and subtle. Like, I feel like men like subtle fragrances in general.
They don't like pow in your face. They don't like that.
Right.
Unless it's a scotch.
Yeah, but even then, like, you want to be able to... The only reason it's pow in your face with a scotch is because you put your nose in it.
That's true.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's a great, awesome candle.
So we have the candle lit.
Go check them out. It's a nice little boutique candle. Women love candles.
They do. And also, candles has been a man gear for us in the past.
That's true.
A prayer candle.
Votive candle.
And I still remember you asked me, why is a candle manly? And I said
fire.
Because prayer is manly and fire is awesome.
Right. And I said, checkmate.
Yeah.
So anyway, let's jump into this gear, or I'm sorry, this drink, because, okay, so Dave Pearson is our official historian for the Council of Man.
David, I cannot explain to you how awesome the stuff that you have done is so far. If you're not part of the Council of Man, or if you are, but you're just not on Facebook, then you don't know what we're talking about. He put together what we call an episode tracker, where he's gone through every episode and named what's the drink, what's the gear, what's the topic, are we in the studio, are we not in the studio, is there a guest, is the guest in the studio,
yeah.
what is the genre of the topic, what's the genre of the drink,
extra notes,
like all these, I mean, it's just, I saw this and I told my wife, Pamela, look at this, this is crazy. Anyway, it just blew my mind.
Yeah.
So cheers to David Pearson.
Yeah, go ahead, do it.
You know, David, the dedication that you have exemplified is exemplary. And I raise my glass to you. May we all have such dedication in our lives.
That's right. I love that. So he told us that we had not done a Lagavulin yet, which I instantly said, nay, that's not true. We've definitely done a Lagavulin.
And you said that today when I got here, you said, I just know we've done it. And I said, dude, we have a historian. You're arguing with the history. This is not a good...
Not a good battle.
Don't fight that battle.
Right. But it turns out, I think that we've done a Lagavulin, but it was for an extra episode for like the Council of Man. So
I think you're right.
Because I know I've reviewed this before with you. So I don't know where we've reviewed this, but I know we have. But what we're doing is Lagavulin 8-year. The 8-year, which was a limited edition. They only brought it out for this year, but because it was so popular, they've said that they're going to continue making it.
Yeah, because what is the 16 the staple of Lagavulin?
Yes. It's the Ron Swanson Lagavulin.
Correct.
If you guys don't know, Parks and Rec, Nick Osterman, is that his name? I believe that's his name.
I don't know.
Anyway, he plays Ron Swanson on Parks and Rec. He's a big Lagavulin fan and a manly dude. I mean, he has his own workshop. I think he's agnostic, but
he put out a video of him sitting there in a wingback chair by a fire, drinking a glass of Lagavulin in silence for 45 minutes long. And if you've ever watched Parks and Rec, then you know exactly why he did that, and it's super funny.
Mm-hmm.
But I just love that.
Yeah. So it's a limited edition for the 200th anniversary of Lagavulin. And so this is what they came up with. And the one I bought was earlier this year. This is the one from earlier this year. And it says, still on the box, available for only 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, let's go ahead and let's cheers and we can get into this. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass. Cheers to Jesus.
Cheers to Jesus.
And our mother. So it's a light scotch. The color is much lighter than like a Lagavulin or, I'm sorry, a Lafroig.
Yeah, it kind of looks like an Ardbeg in color. Because it's also very, very light.
The tin is, yes.
Yeah.
So it's lighter in color. The nose is very, it's light as well, and just in the nose. Crisp,
yeah.
Clean.
When we
a little bit of lemon.
When we turned on the episode and hit the record button, I was going to smell this, and I smelled the microphone instead.
There's some things you just shouldn't tell people.
Well, I did it.
Yeah.
it was really weird.
This one is not overpowering. It's not the Lagavulin 16.
You mean the aroma?
No, just like the whole drink in general.
Everything about it. Okay.
It's not as, you know, the Lagavulin 16 is similar in smokiness and peatiness of Lafroig, more smoky than peaty. But this one, I mean, there's still some smoke and some peat to it, but it's not near as like in your face.
Yeah.
Aggressive. That's the word. Aggressive. Mm-hmm. It's not as aggressive.
That kind of surprises me a little bit. You'd think that with the extra 8 years of aging, that it would smooth out.
Well, it's just the 8 year.
Well, right. Yeah. So the youngest whiskey is 8 years. But still, you know, the assumption is that the 8 year is also the predominant, but I guess that might not be true. Anyway, typically you think an older whiskey is going to be a little bit smoother and more mellow, but not necessarily the case.
This, so one of the tasting notes said, subtle cereal.
Cereal?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Not something that I get.
I'm not sure that is a good... That's not... You can't just say cereal. I mean, are we talking like Cocoa Puffs or Cheerios?
I don't know. I'm assuming grain cereal, some type of grain
like
cereal.
Like a Cheerio.
Yeah, but I don't know that for sure. To me, it's like a lighter, lemony, crisp...
I get more lemon on the nose than I do on
with a smoke
lemon.
And a little bit of peat. I mean, to me, this would be a perfect summer scotch.
Mm-hmm. I think this would go well with fish.
That's interesting.
Isn't it?
I could see it, though.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I'm a big Lagavulin fan.
Like a nice salmon, smoked salmon with lemon juice on it. I think that would be really nice.
Yeah, I think so. I'm a big, like I said, I'm a big Lagavulin fan in general. It's probably like my top three or four favorite distilleries.
I know a lot of people, Lagavulin is their favorite.
Yes.
I don't drink it a whole lot because it's more expensive.
Yeah, the Lagavulin 16 is like a little over $70. Right. It's like $72, $73.
And
this
me,
one I think was 60 something.
For me, it's like, for me, it's in the same ballpark as Laphroaig, and Laphroaig is $44. So I'm not going to pay another $30. I could almost buy another bottle of Laphroaig for that.
Right.
It's just hard to do. I just can't. Again, I just can't bring myself to spend $70 on a bottle of scotch. There's so many good scotches. But right. There's also so many good whiskeys for in the $40 to $50 range where I have not felt the need to go there
yet. And
you
haven't even tried all those yet. So it's like, I want to try those.
Right.
We just had an episode with Mark Gillespie from Whiskey Cast. If you guys haven't checked out that episode, go back and check it out. It's a special edition.
Just for the Council of Man.
No, it was for everybody.
Oh, no, no. We did that one. We published that on the podcast. You're right.
It was for everybody, but it's just a Whiskey 101, basically. Mm-hmm. And this guy does Whiskey Cast. It's a podcast that he's done for 12, 13 years. I mean, he knows a lot about whiskey. I mean, he travels around the world just to try whiskeys. So it was a lot of fun to talk to him. Go check that out if you haven't had a chance to.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
When we get back, I have an epic story to tell about our man Gear. I'm really like excited to tell, but I'm also ashamed to tell it.
All right,
so
I look forward to it.
Buckle up. We're on the Lord's team,
the winning side.
So raise your glass.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles, sitting here in studio with Adam Minahan. If you're wondering, why do we call it the studio? We haven't really said that in a while. We're here in Adam's study, which is also the studio. It's kind of a study, kind of a study, kind of a studio, kind of the studio.
And we're two studs.
Yes, someone else suggested. I thought it was because you guys are the...
Jason Zimdars.
Yes, the studs. And it was like, you know what? That's better.
Yeah.
That's what it is. Yeah. I mean, really. Oh, just because of our humility, we came up with something else.
Right. I'm glad you finally brought that to light.
Yeah.
Before I get into my latter story, as the music was playing, I thought of something that I wanted to share. So, I have two stories.
Sharing time with Adam Minahan.
Yes. Everybody gather around. Yeah. Come closely.
Bring your mats. Come closer.
Close. So, my grandfather, you know, this is the Christmas season we always get with family. You know, that's a family time.
And Advent season.
Yes, Advent season, Christmas season, New Year's. You get together with family. And my grandfather is struggling greatly with dementia. He's struggling greatly with it.
Mm-hmm.
And my grandmother is just a saint for what all she does for him.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, our culture a lot of times says, well, what good are the elder? You know, they're not providing anything to society anymore.
Right.
So this week, my grandfather and grandmother, they went to Arizona because they had to get a special treatment done in hopes of helping him.
Mm-hmm.
And while they were out there, it was outside. It was a nice day. They went out and had lunch. My dad went with them, you know, to make sure that everything was going okay. They had lunch, and there was a band that showed up and was playing music. And my grandfather stood up and presented his hand to my grandmother, and she got up, and they danced together. While the band was playing,
mm-hmm.
at the restaurant.
Yeah.
My dad was witnessing this and took a picture and sent it to me and told me about it. And
mm-hmm.
I sat there and thought, you know, for a man who is struggling greatly with memory. He couldn't repeat. You give him three words, he can't repeat those three words back to you.
Yeah.
For a man who's struggling so much with his memory and just functioning, he still remembers to treat his wife with dignity,
mm-hmm.
and to, you know, be the man and take initiative. And I thought, that is something that I have to, like, I still can learn from him.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I mean, totally.
What a beautiful moment mm-hmm. that it was. Anyway, I don't know why I wanted to share that, but I thought that it's a great example of what a real man, a Catholic man is.
Yeah.
And even though he can't remember most of the things about the day, he still remembers that, you know what, she likes to dance.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna stand up, I'm gonna dance with my wife.
Well, those behaviors become, it's like a reflex. There's a guy who goes to our church.
It's like a virtue.
Yeah, it's like a habit. Mm-hmm. But he was saying that his mom I don't remember if it was Alzheimer's or dementia, but he remembers throughout her life, her telling him that she sings hymns every day so that if she were to ever get Alzheimer's or dementia, she would at least, whether she was choosing to do it or not, would continue to sing those hymns out of like a habit.
Mm-hmm.
And he said she did get Alzheimer's and she does sing these hymns every, like, you can't get her to stop. And she doesn't know what she's doing.
Right.
I mean, it's 'cause right. she's very advanced. But every day she sings these songs. And it's like she had been training herself her whole life.
Knowing that this could be a possibility.
If something happens, I want to keep glorifying God. And it's just like, wow, what a story.
Yeah.
So it's like this, your grandfather's kind of doing the same thing. He has mm-hmm. trained himself in the virtue of gentlemanly behavior,
mm-hmm.
of honor and respect,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, continues to do that today. So that's a great story.
Yeah. It almost made me tear up when he was telling me,
yeah.
you know, because it's like, as a society, we belittle the elderly and uh-huh. consider them a burden, or at least, you know, a lot of people do. Not everybody. That's a gross generalization, but...
Yep. But there's a lot of people
But there's a lot of people that do. Yeah. And yet, we can learn so much from them. Mm-hmm. Even people who aren't mentally all there.
Sure. Yeah.
So anyway, I wanted to share that. So let's jump into the man gear.
So today we're talking about a ladder.
Yes, the man gear is a ladder
today.
This is
your idea.
I thought it was
in your mind when you were picturing the man gear. Is it an extension ladder or an A-frame?
Extension ladder.
Okay, so you have a story about a ladder.
Yes.
And does it involve falling?
Yes.
Okay, because I can't really think of
a story of a ladder that doesn't involve right
falling or hanging.
Right. So suspended in gravity, if you're levitating.
Right.
That could be a possibility.
It could be St. Joseph Cupertino.
Yes, it should be sweet. anyway, so, with a ladder this time of year, you're putting up Christmas lights, you're getting, ready, prepared for Christmas.
Right.
And my dad was always a guy who always went, Clark Griswold almost on the house with lights.
Okay.
And I was always the one helping him. We had a very nice two-story home, growing up, and there was a peak that was, probably 18, 20 feet tall, and mm-hmm. he'd always string the ladder. Well, I was in charge of holding the ladder. This is extension ladder. Well, when I was, maybe 14, 15, I didn't really know what it meant by holding the ladder. It's like, if this starts moving, what do you mean hold the ladder?
Yeah, what do you want me to do?
Right. So I just thought, all that meant was just add a little bit more weight and hold onto the ladder. So step onto the first step and just hold on.
Uh-huh.
That's what I thought. Not blocking it with your feet, blocking the legs of the ladder with your feet to make sure it's not going to move or slip out from under you.
Right.
My dad's up at the very top of the peak and I'm on the ladder and the legs fall out from under us. My dad falls 18 to 20 feet straight down onto our driveway. Falls straight down, landing on the concrete.
Yeah.
And I'm falling. I fall down with the ladder too, but I'm only 6 inches high.
You're on the ground,
right?
Essentially.
Yeah. So I'm falling with it, but I see everything happening, and I'm like, oh my gosh, he just fell 18 feet onto concrete.
Yeah.
This isn't going to be good.
Right. I'm at least in a lot of trouble.
Right. His back maybe broke. I don't know.
Right.
I mean, he landed on his side, and so he laid there for a minute. I'm like, Dad, are you okay? Are you okay? And I probably screamed because people started running up. I don't really remember that part, but I obviously did because other people came running in.
They probably felt the earthquake when your dad hit the ground.
Right. And
like, did he break the driveway?
He Hulk smashed it.
Right. Yeah.
So he laid there for a second, and then he heard my mom coming in, running in, you know, and he got up immediately.
Jumped up.
I'm fine. Turns out, miraculously, he did not break a single bone. He had this huge, massive bruise on his side. I mean, just gnarly bruise.
Yeah.
But he did not break a bone. And he still, the next year, went and put Christmas lights up. I did a little bit better job holding the ladder.
Yeah.
Thank goodness. But, you know, my dad, I thought for sure he was going to break. And he's like, as soon as he heard my mom, he jumped up. He's like, I'm fine.
Nothing happened.
I'm okay. Anyway, I thought that was it. Like,
that's weird that the ladder would slide out from...
Just slid out from under us.
Like, because it was on the concrete.
Yeah. It was like one of those things that there's no doubt when we get into the afterlife and we see actually what happens.
Right.
With our guardian angels, what's happening with his guardian angel, my guardian angel, you know, what all is going on. But there's... I don't think that very many times you can fall from 18, 20 feet onto concrete and not break something.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So... this year I was like, I'm going to do Christmas lights better than I have in the years past.
Last year, I gotta be honest with you, dude, it was pathetic.
It was pretty sad. But at least I did some. I've been ramping up slowly. You know, I did some last year, even though it was just a little bit. Mm-hmm. I didn't have any the year before.
Last year I didn't have any either, to be honest with you.
Yeah. So I wanted
to criticize you, and then I realized I didn't do that either.
I was going to get up on my roof, and the front part of my roof over my driveway is really steep. Mm-hmm. And I got up there, and you know, you can sit on a roof, even a pretty steep one. Mm-hmm. And I had jeans on.
Right.
And I just kept going,
just slowly
sliding all the way down. And it's just like, you know,
not worth it.
Like, I want to put Christmas lights up. But am I willing to die for these Christmas lights? I kind of thought about that for a while. Like, it wasn't an obvious answer. Like, maybe. Maybe I am. Anyway, I didn't do it. I'm still alive. I just didn't put up as much as I wanted to. So I've got another 65 feet of Christmas lights I didn't put up. Anyway, but a ladder. It is like... You just don't see women on extension ladders. Women can get on an extension ladder. I'm sure there are plenty of women who've used extension ladders, but there's something about them that dudes seems to be a pretty primarily dude thing.
Yes.
And there's a lot of risky stuff you can do on a ladder when you're 20, you know, 30 feet up. And so you got to have a lot of prudence to successfully navigate the extension ladder.
That's true. You have to stay focused as well.
You know what else? Whenever I see a ladder, and the like, if the opportunity comes to walk under it, I do it. Like, as a in your face,
superstitious,
superstition. Yeah, superstition.
Yeah, I'm not superstitious.
Like, I walk under ladders and laugh.
I mean, I'm a little stitious, but I'm not superstitious.
Yeah, I'm just, you know,
not.
I'm just not scared of that. I hope. In fact, I always hope a black cat walks in front of me right before I walk under a ladder.
And you smash a mirror.
Yeah. Just if there's one that needs to be broken.
Right. With a sledgehammer.
I wouldn't break.
All that is manly.
Yeah.
Anyway, when we get back, we're going to talk about Mary.
Our Lady.
We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass. Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm Adam Minahan with David Niles. We just got done talking about the ladder as the man gear.
Kind of. We told more stories about being on a ladder, which was fine.
Yeah. Because if you want to learn more about ladders, there's Wikipedia and everything else that you can go learn more about ladders.
Some people are afraid of heights.
Yeah.
I don't really. I think I have a very normal fear of heights. Like,
me too.
I'm not afraid of being up high, Like some people, you know, they go up and they like to the top of a water slide, and they, even though they're on a big platform,
right, they get clam nervous. Up.
Like that doesn't bother me.
No.
But when I'm, you know, 30 feet in the air and like reaching out,
I'm a little nervous.
Yeah. I mean, I
I'm just like, I'm very careful.
I feel like I'm normally nervous.
Right. Our man beverage is Lagavulin 8-year. A delicious.
So good. So good.
A delicious scotch. I want to talk about Mary. I felt like that it's been a long time since we've talked about Mary.
Yeah.
We should talk about Mary more often anyway. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But this being the Advent season, you know, our mother brought Christ into this world. And she's going to be, you know, she's been coming back into this world over and over again throughout time.
Yeah.
Always to point us back towards him. Mm-hmm. You can see that all the time through, you know, even scripture with the wedding feast at Cana. But she's always, her soul magnifies the Lord. So she's always pointing us back to, as a motherly
instinct.
You know what?
I have never literally thought about that phrase.
She magnifies the Lord.
Is it, you? That's like not even possible. I mean, if you think about it from a literal standpoint, to magnify the infinite, you can't make the infinite bigger.
Well, when
she does.
Because when we're finite, looking at an infinite, mm-hmm. we can only see a little bit anyway because of our finiteness.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which she magnifies. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I thought it would be a good idea to talk about her. She's been coming back into this world. Fun fact, our Lady of the Pillar. Do you know this one?
I'm not sure I know Our Lady of the Pillar.
Is it Mother or Lady? Hold on. I want to make sure that I don't say Our Lady. Yeah, Our Lady of the Pillar. Back in 39 AD, according to tradition, our Virgin Mother appeared to St. James the Great in Spain.
39 or 99?
39.
Okay, so Jesus is Mary was probably only dead. What's the tradition, that she lived another 3 years?
I'm not sure about that tradition.
I think that's the tradition. Don't quote me on it, but I'm pretty sure it's that she was around for about 3 years after the death of Jesus. So she would have only been gone.
No. This one, the vision, according to tradition, is the only reported Marian apparition before her Assumption.
Okay, so.
So she must have been bilocating, basically.
Hmm. Fascinating.
But that makes sense. Like if you.
So I wonder how long she was around. Anyway.
I don't know that.
Who knows?
But obviously, if you see somebody who's so virtuous, like our mother, mm-hmm. Missing her would be, if you were exposed to her, you'd want to see her again.
Totally.
So anyway, she's been coming back to our world quite a bit throughout church history, throughout the history.
Yeah.
Always trying to bring back her people, because she's a mother to us all, her children, back to our Lord. There's one that I really wanted to talk about today because I was not familiar with it. And I'm not like a Marian apparition expert by any means or anything like that. So, but Our Lady of Good Success is one that I had not heard of before. Mm-hmm. And this is when she appeared in Ecuador. And this is like in the year early 1600s. Okay.
Okay.
And she's prophesying to, or she's telling a nun about what's going to be coming.
Okay.
What's coming up in the future. Not a specific time frame, but this is what's going to be happening.
Okay.
One of the things she said was, she talked about the defamation of the Eucharist, that people would be stealing the Eucharist at certain times and stomping on them, and, you know, just defaming our Lord.
Yeah.
Right now, we've experienced with black masses. I don't know if you're...
Yeah, well, a couple years ago, here in Oklahoma, we're very familiar with that. It's attempted to go on a couple times over the last few years in the Archdiocese of Oklahoma City, where the city actually allowed a black mass to take place on public, like, in their...
Like Civic Center or something.
Right, yeah. I mean, it's like city property building.
Right.
And they said, oh, there's nothing we can do about it. Mm-hmm. Because it's public,
right?
Which to me was a bunch of crap. But
so she said she was talking about that. Which in that time period, you got to remember, you got to put yourself back into that time period where everybody, reverence was a real thing in that time period. Uh-huh. Reverence has been lost a
respect.
Lot.
Respect.
Respect and reverence.
Which played itself out spiritually as reverence. But, you know, it was like...
That's true, because respect meaning even for another religion, even if I'm not Catholic,
yeah,
but there's
respect. Or for your elders, you know, for the people in the positions of authority. I mean, there was just general respect. And then when it came to God, that played itself out in a deep reverence.
Correct.
Yeah.
So she said that to her. She also said that marriage would be attacked. And I'm that's an obvious one right now.
Yeah.
Not with just traditional marriage, but with the homosexual culture of trying to, quote-unquote, become married. It's very clear in this day and age that marriage would be attacked. Again, something that was not ever thought of at that time.
Yeah.
In the 16th... Even if you... Let's be honest... 40 years ago, 50 years ago,
20 years ago,
20 years ago, if you looked at somebody and said, you know, a man with the same sex attraction to another man wants to get married, that would not be something.
Even 10 years ago, I mean, back in 2007, I mean, we were still in college.
Yeah, I don't think that
nobody would have ever guessed. I mean, I remember right up until the Supreme Court ruled in favor of so-called gay marriage. Mm-hmm. Even at that time, I thought, no, there's no way that they're going to do this because mm-hmm. it, you know, just logically doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. But then it's just, you know, it's incredible how fast that transformation has taken place.
It has snowballed for sure.
Yeah.
Another one she said was that the Catholic spirit would rapidly decay, meaning that there'd be some kind of like implosion within the church. Again, something that has happened with just the church, not only the Catholic churches, before the Protestant Reformation.
So this was post-Reformation, but not a whole lot post.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, because it's early 1600s.
Yeah, but the effects of the Reformation were yet to be really felt.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Weidenkopf,
right,
who is, you know, we recorded with recently, he in his book, his recent new book that just came out, talks about the sexual revolution really being a fruit of the Protestant Revolution. I mean, that's
just what he...
I mean, that's his opinion, but he is a...
historian.
He's an expert on history, and church history is really his forte. It's an interesting idea. But he talks about the married clergy. I don't know. To me, I'm not really sure you can draw a direct line between those two.
It's a causational correlation.
Right. I mean, but I'm not an expert.
Right.
He is. That's just his opinion.
So the last one that I'm going to talk about with this apparition, she also talks about holy orders will be ridiculed and oppressed, and that the devil is going to be laboring intensively to infiltrate the priesthood and corrupt them.
Mm.
Again, something that's obviously happening today. It's clear that the devil is trying to infiltrate the priesthood.
Mm-hmm.
We're not all on the same page in reality. You know,
it's funny how much communism lines up with all of these predictions, because communism actually attempted to achieve all of these things.
She also said, okay, I wasn't going to bring this up, but she also said that if... we didn't consecrate, or we didn't, something either, if we didn't consecrate Russia, or if we didn't do something stop communism.
Russia,
this
Fatima.
Isn't Fatima. No, this isn't Fatima. This is what she was saying here,
uh-huh.
That Russia would be communist. And mm-hmm. this is back when Russia wasn't really even Russia.
Or that the problems of Russia would...
Right. It's like right now saying, like if we don't do this now, then Colombia... is going to be crazy.
You're right. They're going to do all kinds. They're going to spread their problems.
Or Canada or whatever. And it's like, what? What do you mean? You know, it's like, what do you mean? You know, they're barely.
Russia was like a kind of a. They just weren't a big deal in the 1600s.
Right.
It's like really cold there.
Exactly. But, you know, so you can read all these things and you kind of be like, oh, this is all coming to fruition. This is all happening. And you can kind of get this hopelessness. But in reality, I think that you should be, at least I am, I'm more hopeful in all these things, even though they're happening, mm-hmm. because it's like, this is what she told us was going to happen.
Yeah.
I can take our mother's word for what it is. And because she said this and it's happening, that is a sign of hope that, because ultimately it's not a, you know, she's warning us all this is going to happen, but only her son will triumph.
Yeah, she always makes sure to bring that up.
She always says that. So even though you can get caught up in all of this negativity of like, this is happening, she said this and this happened. She said this and this happened. And these things aren't good things.
Right.
You can kind of fall into this despair, hopelessness, like, oh no, end of times. But in reality, I think that it's more of a hopeful thing. And it's a beauty. It's a beautiful gift to our church that shows that she's still around. She's still here protecting us and bringing us, holding our hand, bringing us to her son. What are your thoughts? You agree?
No, of course I do. Good. Totally.
Good. I don't want you to be spatting heresy on the show. When we get back, we're going to keep talking about it and talk about our mother. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles, sitting here with my friend Adam Minahan, talking about one of my favorite topics, which is Our Lady. If you have not consecrated yourself to Our Lady, there's nothing that I can recommend more. There are a number of excellent consecrations. St. Maximilian Kolbe has a good one, the Militia Immaculata. And then, of course, there is the St. Louis de Montfort total consecration to Our Lady. I have done the latter and renew it every year. And
the 33 days to Morning Glory, isn't that one as
well? So the 33 days, I have not read that book. My understanding is that it is a combination of both.
Okay.
And that it is largely St. Louis de Montfort's consecration.
Okay.
But it is not his straight up deal.
Okay, because Father Michael Gately, I believe, off the top of my head, I think he's the one who wrote the 33 days to Morning Glory.
I believe that is correct. I've heard so many good things about it. You know, it's not like, oh, he's messing with the. You're consecrating yourself to Our Lady,
right?
And sure, why not do both?
Right.
So the Militia Immaculata. One of the big deals with it is spreading the miraculous medal,
which I wear,
being on a mission to give it out to people. That's kind of one of the things.
Mm-hmm.
My wife Pamela, she has done that one. She recently also did St. Louis de Montfort. So anyway, I've done total consecration according to St. Louis de Montfort. It was amazing. You guys should do it.
You see that there's people in your life that have passed away, or even saints that you look at and you read their autobiographies and things like that. One thing that they have in common when you look at them, you're like, this person was a holy person.
Mm-hmm.
Was the reverence for our
deep devotion to Our Lady.
I mean, Deacon John Donnelly from the Tulsa Diocese, who just passed away.
Mm-hmm.
He had a deep devotion to Our Lady.
Yeah.
Somebody who you look at and say, that's a holy man.
Mm-hmm.
St. John Paul II, St. Thomas Aquinas, St. Louis de Montfort, St. Maximilian Kolbe. I mean, the list goes on and on and on and on. And all these saints had one thing in common, and that was the devotion to our mother.
Right. And for our Protestant brothers and sisters, I know that many of them often feel that a devotion to Our Lady takes away from devotion to Christ. In a life totally dedicated to him. And I can see where that misconception comes from, because on the surface, it kind of does seem like that. But once you start to learn and study about Mary, you realize that because she was perfectly full of grace, as we hear in the Gospel of Luke, her will is 100% in line with the will of Christ. Mary's will is Christ's will.
Mm-hmm.
She has no will for herself other than the will of her son, because she was this perfect creation from God, saved in advance by Christ's salvific work on the cross. So to be to entrust yourself to Mary in her care is to be entrusting yourself in the avenue through which Christ has chosen to come to us here on earth. So I think this is really important for Advent. I was really glad that you brought this up, because think about Mary. She was like the first, she personally experienced the first Advent. She, I mean, she's sitting there with Christ in her womb, mm-hmm. waiting for him to come. I mean, talk about anticipation.
Right.
And talk about looking for, I mean, this is really the attitude that we should all have. Like, right. we, like Christ is within us and we are waiting for him to be born and to come into the world.
Right.
In just praying the rosary, I've often thought about what was that moment like? The moment yeah. Jesus was born, you know, I've often wondered if there was a moment of peace
throughout the world,
in like, the entire world, where for even a moment, the entire world was at peace. If there was a moment where everybody just kind of felt great mm-hmm. for a moment or a minute before it passed away. But, you know, right. who knows? That probably didn't happen, but, it, you know.
It is cool to think about, almost like, so, you know, we talk about the reverence of our mother.
Yeah.
Think about if you knew for certain the spot right on the floor next to you right now, mm-hmm. you knew for certain that Christ incarnate stepped right there. You know, what would you do? You would have, like, I would block it off.
Yeah,
you know,
protect it.
Protect it in all aspects that I could. Mm-hmm. Now imagine how much more reverence you would have for somebody who carried our Lord in her body.
Right.
You know, that is the kind of reverence that we have for our mother. I mean, if I knew that Christ sat down in this chair right next to us, Dave, no one would sit in this chair mm-hmm. ever again.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so it's the same thing. Like, I would reverence this chair thinking that Christ sat right here. Mm-hmm. How much more would you say for the person who carried him?
One of the interesting things, I like science, so one of the interesting things that they've discovered in the you know recent decades about, ever since DNA studies have come out, is that mothers carry the DNA of all of their children in their body for the rest of their life. That the DNA of, if you take a woman who's had 9 kids, you can take a blood sample, you can find the DNA of all of their kids in her blood. It's like this chimeric phenomenon that happens. And so you think about that with Mary, that she lived her whole life with Jesus's blood in her. It's like the most Eucharistic thing ever, that she almost was experiencing the spiritual fruits of the Eucharist from the moment of the incarnation, that she would have had Christ's blood in her veins. And of course, Christ got her blood, I mean, his literal blood, mm-hmm. his DNA from Mary in the first place. But you know, that's just this beautiful thing that Jesus comes to us through Mary. He could have just descended.
Right.
He could have done anything.
Anything. Absolutely.
But he chose to come to us through Mary.
And a lot of saints say that he will choose to come through her again in the second coming.
I've heard that too. And I'm interested to see how that plays out
at some point in time,
whenever that is.
Right.
But so I just think Advent is the time to renew your dedication to Mary. Mm-hmm. Just because, I mean, it's just such a Marian season.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah, totally. So Mary, you know, she has all this virtue. She's perfected virtue. Mm-hmm. In fact, St. Alphonsus Liguori says that if you take all of the martyrs and all of the holy men and women of the whole world, of all of existence, and combine all of their holiness and all of their virtue,
every person in heaven, every good thing they've ever done,
and you combine all of that, it would not equal to 1 minute or 1 second of our mother.
Yeah, so like one sigh of our mother garners more grace from Christ than all of the...
But it's only because
all of these things combined.
She's perfected this virtue. Mm-hmm. So as men, even though, you know, we talk about virtue on the show, and we tend to talk about the virtue geared towards men, obviously, with it being this show.
Sure.
One of the people, the ultimate person outside of Jesus Christ that we could look to who's perfected virtue is our Mother Mary.
Yeah. A difficult thing that for me to get my head around a lot, which I sometimes think about, is really our role as humanity is a feminine role. that we are the bride of Christ. He's the bridegroom. We are the bride. The church is his bride. So, you know, us as humanity need to play a receptive role. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so men are just not as good at that as women are. So this is one thing I think is important for us to really have a Marian devotion, because she teaches us how to
surrender our will.
Right. And in humility, how to receive from God. Because even though we're still the initiators and we, you know, represent Christ in our families, for our own relationship with God, we are not the initiators.
Right.
We can initiate nothing with God. Mm-hmm. And so I think by having this devotion to Mary and abandoning ourselves to her motherly care, mm-hmm. that we can really take on that receptive role that is the only way to get to heaven.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's what part of the consecration is all about, right? It's surrendering ourselves and saying, okay, not my will, but your will, Mother, I'm entrusting my will to you. And mm-hmm. what is her will? We've already said that her will is completely united to only what Christ wants.
Right.
So she's taking us by the hand and leading us straight to her son.
Right, exactly. She's like a reflection of Christ. She's often like the moon.
Right.
Because the moon is just the moon doesn't generate its own light. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just the reflection of the light of the sun. Right. And, you know, so there's a lot of, ever since the beginning, people have been referring to her as the moon.
Right. And so that's why it's so important that she's come back. Her motherly instincts, she's come back to this world time and time again, only to promise us that if we, you know, unite ourselves to Christ and we do his will and we continue to grow closer to him, that she will shower us with these graces, mm-hmm. Because she's the co-mediatrix of all graces.
Yeah.
So she would shower us with all these graces if we continue to do his will.
You know, one thing I've never done, just with the minutes we've got left, that I've always wanted to, and I don't know what's holding me back, I think just I need to look it up how to do it, is pray the Seven Sorrows Rosary.
Oh, yeah, because her promises for those are amazing.
See, I just know... All I know is that I've heard people talk about it, like how incredible they are. I've never really done the research on them. I've never prayed them.
A couple of her promises, just to tease you. I'll just give you a couple.
Yeah, do it.
I will grant you peace within your family.
Hmm.
How just that one alone would be enough.
Totally.
You will be enlightened by the divine mysteries. I will console you in the pains, and I will accompany you in all your work. There's three.
That sounds pretty good.
So, anyway, thanks so much for listening. We ask our mother to pray for us as we welcome the Lord incarnate into the world on Christmas. Lagavulin 8 was our man drink. The ladder was our man gear.
You know what? And Mary is a ladder to Christ. I meant to say that. I threw it in there. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass and cheers to Jesus.